Hello, everyone. Thank you for watching The Naturalist Capitalist. I am your host, Reed Coverdale, coming to you from the truck stop. I'm trying out my headset so that my audio will be better when I'm on the road. If any of the audio is funky, if you guys could please let me know in the comments, I'll see if there's anything I could do about it, but no promises. I have a ton of new subscribers. I did just do that video with Ryan Dawson and Dave Smith, and it's on target to be my most successful episode I've ever put out. I just want to give a big shout out to both Dave and Ryan for coming on. And a lot of you guys didn't know who Ryan was and you wanted to know who he was. He's great. Go check him out at ancreport.com. He's been removed from pretty much every media outlet, including Twitter, but now he's back on for now. He's ANC Report on Twitter. Audio is good. Perfect. I'm glad. But yeah, go check him out. And then obviously Dave and Eric Jackman too. But today I've got a good show. I've got Ace from Twitter, who goes as Aceartist. I'm sure lots of you guys know him. I've been following him for a while, like a lot of what he has to say. And I'm going to add him right here. Ace, how you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing wonderful, Reed. Thanks so much for inviting me. This is my pleasure. It's great.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I think I've been following you since probably February or so, or it might be longer, actually. That's when I definitely noticed I was following you. But you haven't been around that long, right? You're sort of relatively new?
Yeah, a little bit over a year on Twitter.
Okay. And were you... Were you well known at all before that, or did you just jump into the scene recently?
No, I jumped in. I did not have a following whatsoever before Twitter. Yeah. I knew of people on Twitter. Like, I kind of lurked Twitter before I joined beforehand, but as far as people following me, you know, that's relatively new.
Yeah. So did you jump on just to observe, or did you think you had something to say that nobody else was adding that you could actually make a big difference, or What pushed you over the edge, and what got you pushing a message and trying to be a new voice on there?
Yeah, so I originally joined just because I liked the people. I had been lurking previously. I liked the people in the community, and I like, okay, I want to be a part of this. I did not think that people would actually really care what I had to say, and I to be honest, I didn't think I necessarily at the time had a message that people wanted to hear, but I guess I do in some sense now. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of similar with me. I mean, I think you are, I mean, you're much more well-read than I am. And, you know, you're much more articulate than I am. So I can understand why people are following you. But when I became big, I was kind of shocked. it kind of scares me because I think it says a lot more about the times we're in. It does about me. You know, the fact that I have the following I do is, you know, something's off.
No, I don't think so. I like the way you conduct the show, the way you conduct the podcast. It's fully understandable to me why people would want to follow you. Now, me, on the other hand, I don't know why I have followers. So, but I appreciate them.
Yeah. So we're both in the same boat, I guess. We, mutual respect with mutual confusion for why
That's
people
right.
are listening to us. So everyone watching this, neither of us understand why you're here for, we get why you're here for the other guy, but not for ourselves. So, you know, that's great.
Right.
I like that. So yeah, I watched your appearance on Josh Smith. I saw you on Liberty Lockdown, and then obviously I've been following you for a little while, and we come from a similar past. I believe we're both from the conservative side of the aisle. Is that correct?
Yep, that's correct.
Yeah. So were you like a full-fledged neocon, or were you more moderate than that, or were you like a populist Republican, or what cloth were you cut?
Yeah, so I was probably just the normie basic Republican in the sense that I was not a neocon. I was not that devout, you know what I mean? And I was also not that, I was not big on the conservative social issues either. So I was always more leaning towards the classic liberal side of things, even when I was a conservative. So I think that's kind of what allowed me to get this jumping off point into libertarianism.
Gotcha. So how long ago did that happen? Who grabbed your attention? And do you remember like what rough time frame it was?
Yeah, it was probably around almost 10 years ago now, because I was very political even when I was very young. And it was Judge Napolitano on Fox News, actually, which kind of opened the door for me to libertarianism. Through him, I found people like Ron Paul, Tom Woods. Through Tom Woods, I found Scott Horton, Michael Malice, all these people. And it was just kind of a domino effect after that. But yeah, Judge Napolitano on Fox News.
Okay, if you don't mind asking, how old are you anyways?
I'm 25.
Oh, okay. Wow, you're younger than me. This is a compliment, but I definitely thought you were older than I am. So,
oh.
Wow. So you were 15 when you first started really getting into this
stuff. Yep. Yep.
Wow. That's
And
that's
after I got into it, I just started like binge reading. I've read like libertarian, like really nerdy libertarian theory for like probably 2-3 years, I guess, and also absorbing like podcasts. That's where I got a lot of it. Like Tom Woods' show, I have to shout out that. That's probably what really got me started into all of it, all like the reading theory and everything.
Yeah, see, I was politically active, and I've been dropping pictures from my childhood. I mean, even when I was 10 in 2004, I was a huge George W. Bush fan. I just forgot about that a couple weeks ago. That caught some attention. But when I was 14, I was a big Mike Huckabee guy.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah.
It wasn't until I was 18 in 2012 that I started smartening up a little bit, but not enough. I remember I liked Ron Paul, but it wasn't for the right reasons. I liked him. Well, I mean, you could not necessarily. Some of it was the right reason. Like, I thought he was genuine and he told the truth.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't, oh, he wants to end the wars. Oh, he wants to, you know, end the Patriot Act. He wants us to be able to govern ourselves. You know, it wasn't any of like the philosophically correct reasons. It was more just like, yeah, this guy's out here, you know, and all these other guys are fake. And it wasn't until, unfortunately, after he was done with everything, you know, done with Congress, done for running for president, that I actually found out about his son and got active that way. But so Tom Woods, let's see. So 10 years ago, that would have been so around Ron Paul's second run. So you were like way tuned into that or?
Actually, I wasn't as tuned into the Ron Paul thing. I knew who he was and I liked him, but I wasn't super tuned into him at the time. It was actually Judge Napolitano, which turned me on to Ron Paul later or afterwards a little bit. So I wasn't in the Ron Paul movement space as much as I would have liked to have been, but I was still observant of it.
Okay. So when did you go from, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but from what I know of you, it sounds like you went from libertarian to anarchist. It wasn't straight from Republican to anarchist. How long did that take? And who was it, just a matter of time, or was it different people you started reading or listening to?
It was sort of just a matter of time, I guess, because like when I was like a libertarian or minarchist, I guess, I don't remember being like held down. Like, I don't ever remember like hearing like someone was an anarchist and thinking, oh, well, I'm not that. I always thought that, oh, yeah, in some sense, you could say I was always an anarchist, but I didn't identify as that until like later on. I'm like, okay, I actually like this label. I'm just going to identify as this, because it's hard because when I think back, it's like after being an anarchist, it's like, well, when did I? There's not one moment, you know what I mean? It was kind of a bunch of different moments that just led up to me calling myself an anarchist, I guess.
Yeah, I didn't actually consider myself an anarchist until this year. Mm-hmm. And it's something that always kind of tugged at my heart, I guess, but I would avoid it. You know, I always liken it to my to how I lost my faith. It was the same way. You know, I think I always kind of knew I was an atheist, but I just didn't want to accept it. Like, I was
sure,
you know, that was a scary label that I just really never wanted to adopt. It was exactly the same with anarchy. I just, like, I don't know, man. If you admit you're an anarchist, you sound nuts. Not just to everybody else, but to yourself at first too. You're like, really? Is this really where? And but I don't know, the events of 2020. And I always point to the two events. One was the bill they signed right before Christmas to send billions of dollars overseas. You know, in like 4 hours when nobody read the bill and like almost everybody voted for it. That was one moment. And then the Capitol riot, just the response to it. And then, you know, seeing John Brennan go on CNN and say we need to crack down on all these crazies and everything. I was just like, okay, yeah, you know, maybe I don't believe in any of this anymore. Maybe it's not worth the trade-off. And I finally was able to admit to myself and then publicly said, all right, you know what? I'm done. Like, I'm stepping into this new world.
Yeah.
And I've actually started reading different anarchist philosophers. And it's funny because I don't even necessarily think I'm learning a lot. It's just like reaffirming a lot, you know, like, because you hear somebody put into words exactly what you've been thinking. And you're like, oh, no, this is it right here. But they've just said it better than you possibly could have.
Yeah, it's just like recontextualizing all these different disparate thoughts you might have had into like one coherent full of philosophy, I guess. Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome, though. Yeah.
Yeah. Was it like that for you, or was it deconstructed through literature? Was it like was it empirical influences on your life that kind of made you more anarchistic? Or was it just like, oh, this logically makes sense from reading this book and reading this article and hearing this guy?
Yeah, for me, it was much more of a logical chain process where it was like, okay, this is just at first, when I first started getting to libertarianism, my main focus was, okay, let me find all the ways why this is wrong. And as I started thinking about this more and more, it's like, okay, I'm running out of excuses now. And I think that's when I actually became like an anarchist, is like, okay, I have no logical argument against like anarchism at this point. I think it's really, really sound. Like, as long as you accept the premise that, you know, human beings have, you know, essentially a right to life or a claim to the best claim to their own life. After that, it's just a logical progression that leads you to anarchism, in my view.
Yeah. I mean, I remember people telling me that when I first started looking at libertarianism, and I kind of laughed. I was like, yeah, sure, whatever. And it ended up being true. I mean, it's funny. Like, I think a good way to really sum it up in a short thought is, you know, you don't think the government is capable of running all these stupid programs and everything, but for some reason, you do think it's capable of running the most important things.
Yes.
And then, like, once you come to that conclusion, you're like, oh, fuck. Like, okay, I can't do this at all.
Yeah, that's a great retort to like conservatives who will say, well, the government can't run the thing. It should stay out of the free market. It's terrible at running things right. It can't run a shoe company properly. It can't run clothing. We wouldn't trust it to run food, certainly, like monopolize food. So why would we trust it to monopolize the most important social services possible, right? So just as you said, it doesn't really make sense on that level.
Yeah, and now that I've kind of accepted that label and accepted that philosophy, it actually makes it easier to be consistent, because it kind of was hard to argue with progressives against social programs or anything. If you're seeding the ground that the government is fit to run the military, why would it not be fit to run healthcare? You know, like it's like Republicans with minimum wage. Once they're fine with an $8 an hour minimum wage, then why not 15? Why not 20? What, I mean, you know,
you seed
your solid foundation.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And I one of the attractive things about anarchism, as you said, it's consistent. And what you just have to accept that human beings have rights, and they have the best, each human being has the best claim to their life. Right. And everything else, every other thing we call a right, in anarchist terms, is derivative from that, right? So really, there is one right, the right of self-ownership, the right to, you know, you have the best claim to your life, and everything, every other right you have is derived from that one right. So it has this logical, strong foundation that's really appealing.
Right. So what is it you do for work? I'm assuming you try to stay somewhat anonymous.
Yeah.
Your name on Twitter, but I don't know if you could tell us anything about what you do or like what.
I'd prefer to kind of stay anonymous in that regard.
Yep.
Fine. If that's okay. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's cool. I mean, in my, I think we all just kind of imagine people like you and Bert, like what you actually do, because we don't know what it is, so we just like
right but,
like I picture you guys like Sherlock Holmes or something, like on your computer all like making up all these anarchist memes or whatever, but we'll just keep living with that illusion, whatever it is. So
yeah, adds to the mystique. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's cool. I you know, I wondered if I made a mistake by coming out with my real name and like what I do for work and everything. But at this point, I just have to run with it, because.
Oh, yeah, no, I respect that.
I've sort of made it my identity now, you know, like my identity is the blue collar guy who actually lives in a city that the government has created. And I'm lucky my boss has actually subscribed to me on YouTube. He actually might be.
Oh, that's funny. Right now, that's awesome.
Yeah, no, I lucked out. So You know, the more controversial things I say, the more likely I am to get a raise. So, you know,
that's awesome.
One of those rare lucky camps.
Oh yeah, that's great.
So, do you think that because they're trying to boil the water faster and the frog might jump out sooner, that there's opportunity for harvesting mines that we might not have been able to otherwise? I don't know if you saw my show with Ryan Dawson and Dave mm-hmm. Smith, but we actually sort of got into this, and it got a little heated. It wasn't hostile at all, but it was definitely like a competitive conversation. We were arguing over whether it's better that we have Biden now, or if it would have been better if we had Trump now. And Dave and I both kind of thought that things are getting so bad right now that there's no excuse for anyone who believes in any sort of small government or, self-governance or anything to mm-hmm. not be paying attention now, where they used to be able to justify it a little bit under Trump. Do you think that that's a good thing, that it's getting so bad that people have to wake up? Because it seems like you can't get anything done until you wake people up. And so almost like pushing things closer to the edge is the only way to wake them up. I was just wondering what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, I certainly think it's not a great thing in every sense, but it's certainly a good thing that we can take something good from a bad situation, right? I think there will always be people who will self-deceive themselves into like just accepting whatever. Like this is a little bit of a black pill, but I'm not personally black pilled on like politics in general. But there are a certain amount of people who will just accept politics as it is all the way onto a train car. You know what I mean? There are those people. But the good news is that there are people who are shocked to wake up. There are people who are like, whoa, wait a minute, right? And I mean, if people need proof of that, just look at anyone who's an anarchist today was probably not an anarchist at one point. So they woke up. So that's always leaves the potential to say, hey, look, if I can do it, other people can probably do it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and my message of anarchy, like talking to other people, would have been laughed at, you know, 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And now they actually sort of want to hear what I have to say. You know,
right.
Like
yeah.
Some people who voted for Mitt Romney are considering anarchy now. You know,
that's
quite an evolution.
Yeah, that's a win. That's definitely a win.
Yeah. And I don't know, man. Like I've heard you say that, you know, war and being against the police are like your two top issues, and I'm kind of the same way. And I think mm-hmm. it, for me at least, it's because I come from the stupidity of the right.
Yeah.
So I have an aversion to it. And you know, mm-hmm. People like Dave Smith, who come from the left, they have an aversion to the. I mean, I do. We do too, but not as strongly. Like they hate the dumb stuff about the left, mm-hmm. Just because it's, you know, it's what they're used to.
Right.
I don't know. Like I've come to terms with the fact that the right is easier to reach in general, and it hurts to admit that. I think it's true. And I don't even necessarily think just right now, but they tend to be less monolithic, I guess. Like there tends to be a little bit more variance of thought on the right than there is on the left. And the similarities they have are horrible, you know, like they're
right.
the right wing dogmatic bullshit is really bad, but I feel like there's a little bit less of it over there than there is on the left. And I think that's just been exemplified the last year and a half. I mean,
right.
the left is just in lockstep. And when I say the left, if there's any like good progressives watching this, I'm saying like from the center over to the left. I'm not trying to say that Joe Biden is a great progressive leftist or something. Like this is very generalized, like from the center to the right and from the center to the left. If you break those two groups apart, the left is much more religious about what they believe. Do you think that's true, or what's your
yeah.
take on that?
Yeah, 100%. I think like why it's, I think I've thought about this a while. I think why it's easier to reach people on the right is because they at least pay mouth service to the idea of individualism. You know what I mean? Even though like there's countless, obviously, examples of them not doing that. But the fact that they pay lip service to it means that they at least conceptualize of individualism in some way. And that leaves opportunities for people like us to go in and say, okay, well, if you believe in individualism, then that should lead you down to a logical conclusion of X, Y, or Z. Right. And then that's contradictory with what what you believe over here. So it kind of gives us this wiggle room to kind of, you know, make our arguments from that standpoint. Whereas someone on the left, they might not buy into any of our premises. You know what I mean? And that's not to say all leftists, as you said, but a lot of the left doesn't agree with any of our premises. So I can definitely see that even if someone's paying mouth service to one of our premises, from the arguments we make, that's at least better in some way, right? Even if we can't convince them, it still leaves us a room to say, oh, well, it plants a seed in their mind, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I think one other thing, too, even though I'm not a religious person, I do admit mm-hmm. that more people on the right, since they have religion, they might care a little bit more about objectivity mm-hmm. And objective truth, where a lot of people on the left really just don't care. And if you don't care about objective truth, it's hard to form a philosophy and sure. to care about being consistent at all. So yeah. at least there's an inkling of that on the right. So if you say, hey, this doesn't make any sense, this doesn't add up, this is inconsistent with this other position you have, mm-hmm. you might be luckier with someone on the right to be able to convince them that they're off.
Right, exactly. I agree 100%.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, as far as the things that the right does suck on, they're kind of like the biggest things, you know, that's
yeah, really right. Right. Yeah. Like, since growing up around conservatives, it's like I can in some sense speak their language, but they drive me on the worst things like war and the drug war, for example, and police, it drives me insane. It's really infuriating. Specifically like the police too, you know, that's a big one. You always see this like meme of, you know, you'll have this conservative bumper sticker where it's like, don't tread on me next to the thin blue line sticker, you know? Right. And that is a lot of conservative mindset. That is their mindset a lot of the time. They'll simultaneously, you know, stand for, you know, individualism, freedom, you know, the rest. But then they'll have, oh yeah, we need to support the cops, the very people who are going to take away our freedom. So it's really, really frustrating, you know, trying to parse that.
Yeah. I just got a comment saying my audio is lower. I, unfortunately, on this device that I have, I can't adjust
that. I can turn mine down a little bit if that'll equalize it more.
I guess so. Yeah, just turn it down a little bit and hopefully we'll be pretty close to the same.
All right. I think
sorry, guys. This is
a little bit better.
This is what happens when you're a truck driver and you try to start a podcast. So,
all right. Hopefully, I'm not too low, or hopefully, I didn't make it louder. All right.
Yeah. I can't tell because I have an earpiece. All right. Tell me in the comments if that's better, guys. I hope it is. Yeah. Let's see. Okay. Cool. I was really upset with a lot of conservatives last year because they didn't care about how much money we were spending, about how much the Constitution was being trampled over.
Like, right.
I mean, some of them did, but some of them were just like, oh no, everything's fine. Like, Trump's going to take care of it. He's going to fire Fauci. He's going to, you know, in his second term, he's going to actually pull out of Afghanistan. He's actually going to do this and he's going to do that. And, you know, now those same people who were just kind of like, oh yeah, no, everything's going to be fine. Now they've lost it. And they're not just like, oh, we're going to vote Republican next time. They're like, we hate the government. We don't believe in this electoral system anymore. You know, we think that the CIA wants to kill us.
Right.
And so to me, that's all progress. Like,
yes, exactly.
Hysteria is good.
100%. Yeah. It's like, you know, say what you want about Trump, but at least he in some sense radicalized his base to distrust the CIA and these intelligence agencies. And that's a great thing, right? No matter what you think about him, I don't like the guy, but the fact that he was able to do that to his base, to the Republican base, right? The fact that he was able to go on the Republican debate stage and in South Carolina, look into Jeb Bush's eyes and say, your brother was the reason 9/11 happened, right? That's so, and he got an applause for it. That's crazy, but that's awesome, right? So that's, there's definitely progress to be made there.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of libertarians are short-sighted and they feel like if you don't fully convert somebody that you're not winning.
Right.
And I don't look at it that way. I mean, we were talking on my stream with Dave and Ryan about how Tucker Carlson is the mainstream Fox News host now. It's not Bill O'Reilly anymore. Like, that is a huge advancement. You know, you got
from
neocon to an anti-war populist. And so he might still suck on the cops or immigration or the drug war or whatever, but it's like, okay, I mean, we'll take the wins we can get. You know, if we can get any direction toward us, we'll take it.
Right. And when, and you know, libertarians will, as you said, will be quick to say, oh, well, like, he's bad on all these other things. Okay. But just imagine how easy it would have been to have someone in that position who is also bad on the things he's good on too, you know? So it would have just been like, yeah, as you said, just take the wins where you can get them at the very least. This is progress in some areas. You don't need to get this in. The progress can be asymmetric, right? You don't have to get it all across the board at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. So I am not one who thinks that if we just hit the Rothbard button, all of our problems would go away. And I don't think anybody really thinks that. But we need so much like societal change in order to get to a place where our country would be better. And a lot of the state-sanctioned institutions have completely destroyed any hope of that being the case. But do you think that there's a hope for actually having a revolution of the mind and getting a generation that cares about self-governance and self-preservation and, you know, take care of their community again? Because at least, I mean, we're in basically the same age bracket. So growing up, I was extremely disheartened by how many people my age didn't want to learn anything, didn't want to do anything, wanted everything handed to them on a silver platter. Do you think that it's realistic to hope that we can move away from statism and toward individualism and actually have a society that's productive?
Yeah, I actually do. There's two parts to this question. I think there's always going to be a large segment, in fact, maybe even a majority of people who just do not want to read theory. And, you know, I think that's fine in some sense, because that's just they're too busy. They have, you know, they have lives where they don't want to be obsessed with politics. So there's always going to be some amount of people who are just like that, who are just, you know, I just live my life, man, don't bother me, that kind of mindset. And I think that's a win, actually. And then there's going to be, but I do think there is real hope for progress in the sense that there will be more people who are growing in numbers, exponentially growing in numbers, who do care about individualism and liberty. And those are the people who are really passionate about it. Those are the people who are able to actually make societal changes, right? We don't need, it's the wrong way to look at it to think that, oh, well, we need 51% of the population before we can actually get our society, right? It's like, that's not usually how it happens. Progress starts on the margins, right? And then it's the real people who stand alone generally, who are the revolutionaries, who then create social change that just gets adopted by the masses, whether the masses can conceptualize of that or not, completely understand what's going on around them. It still gets carried with them where they go. So I think one way of doing this is that there are certain all you need to do is you need to readjust the incentive structure for people to move in and work in, right? Because a lot of the times is that when the incentive structure is off, this is going to cause, you know, the normies, I guess, for lack of a better term, to promote statism, whether they wittingly know it or not, you know what I mean? So if you can kind of readjust that, whether through technology like Bitcoin, for example, to promote more individualist ends, then I think that's how you actually move the culture. You create different alternatives to the state-run system to actually, and you have to promote it in a way, not in a philosophical way, because that's not going to get a lot of normies on board. You have to promote it in a way that says, hey, look, this will be better for you. Right. This will be easier for you. This will be better for you in the long run. And that's why you should adopt it, while also sneaking in some of those philosophical ends towards liberty.
Yeah, I find it more effective to get them all to hate something than to love something.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I hope that the hate evolves into the love of the opposite of what they hate.
Absolutely.
Especially with younger people, because a lot of them have been really screwed. I mean, don't get me wrong, a lot of them are lazy and they don't know how to do anything. But they've also been lied to their entire lives. You know, they've been put into a school system that tells them they won't be successful unless they go tens of thousands of dollars into debt to get a loan for a degree that, you know, they might use. And then they'll probably just end up bagging groceries, you know, for 5 years, making $10 an hour trying to pay it off. So you have a right to be pissed at the system. Like, even if you're an idiot for falling into it, you still have a right to be angry. So I try to harness that anger. Is that what you try to do initially too? Or what's your strategy?
Yeah. Oh yeah, you always have to come at people from where they're at currently, and a good way to do that is find out what makes them mad, right? Because it's much easier to not unite people on the basis of what they all oppose rather than what they all like. Because a lot of you know, this is what the problems like libertarians have. It's like, well, okay, once we get rid of the government, then what do we do next, right? This like, well, I want to live like this, this, and this, and then there's all this like infighting about, well, no, I want to live like this. No, the point is that the state has to go first, and then people can decide amongst themselves how they wish to live peacefully, right? So the first roadblock is getting rid of the state. It is finding, or it's at least finding people who you can align with that hate particular parts of the state as much as you, right? So like if you can find a great anti-war leftist, so there's more on the right now that are growing, that's great. And you can unite that way on specific issues, right? Just to, which in my opinion are the most important issues. So you always have to find where people are the angriest and ally with them against the state, right? In that way. So I think that's the strategy.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I think that libertarians kind of need to realize that we eat the same thing. You know, I mean, you were kind of pointing to it right there. That's what I try to get them to realize is like, look, we don't want to impose our will on each other. So what we do after we get rid of the state is less of a consequence than what the state is doing to us right now.
That's right. I mean, that's right.
Yeah. And they just can't get it through their heads. It's all of like, if you're not with me on 100% of these social issues or religious issues or family ideals or whatever that have nothing to do with legislation or law, then you're my enemy. And it's like, whoa,
yeah.
Hold on.
Yeah. Yeah. It kind of like presupposes this idea that I think that's a good way to point out, right? It's like some people come to anarchism because that's their highest goal. That's their highest ideal is freedom. And then what comes after is kind of secondary. And for some people, they come to anarchism because they think there some other primary goal will be bolstered by an anarchist society, right? So some people think, well, I want an anarchist society because I think that way my social values will be more predominant. You know what I mean? So I think that's kind of the divide right there. It's people who just want anarchism or freedom as their highest goal versus people where for people, sometimes their secondary goal and they have a sneaky, like primary value that they hold to that they want to kind of sneak in there. You know, it's like the question of Rothbard had this great essay, right? Do you hate the state? Right. Mm-hmm. And it's like, we want people who hate the state on our side, you know, even if it's, you know, just a minarchist or just, you know, people who aren't even anarchists at all. I would rather take a minarchist or even a non-libertarian who just hates the state or part of the state in some sense versus like some anarchist who just is like, well, you know, it would be more efficient if we just got rid of the state. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. Most libertarians I talk to become anarchists from Rothbard. And with me, it was actually Lysander Spooner. And I think it's because, you know, if you look at Rothbard, he's basically just saying the whole thing's bullshit. I mean, if you read Anatomy of the State, it's just saying this whole idea is dumb.
Right.
Where no treason is deconstructing the idea of the Constitution and the state from an internal perspective. It's like, okay, fine. We'll accept that if you sign this contract that it's binding and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But if you start looking at this, you know, this doesn't have any bearing on you. And it just breaks it apart from a statist perspective almost. And you realize like, holy shit, like even in a statist mindset, this doesn't make any sense. You know, like this is, and then I started reading Rothbard and then, I was just like, okay, shit, like I'm done. But I don't know. It's interesting seeing how different people come to that conclusion. You know, to me, it was really because I was trying to keep the statism together almost. Like I was trying to justify just the minarchy side. I was like, come on. And then when you read Lysander Spooner, you're just like, oh, shit. Like, I really can't.
Yeah, you lose all possibility of like other options at that point. It's like, oh, well, this doesn't even logically make sense now. So, I you know, once you know something, you can't unknow it. You know what I mean? So it's just you're stuck with that knowledge.
Yeah. So I have heard you referred to as the modern day Lysander Spooner. And I know you're going to deny that, but I like that. I think it's great. You're not just repeating what other people have said. You've come up with great sayings on your own and you're using
Thank you. I
metaphors
appreciate
that you come up with. I'm going to butcher it, so correct me if I get the saying wrong. But you said like the Constitution is a gun-free zone sign for conservatives. Is that right?
Yeah.
Or,
Yeah. That,
yeah. That's beautiful. I love it. So
thank you.
When did you start branching out from just reading other people's stuff and coming up with your own stuff, or has that always been a thing, or has it been more prominent lately? Or
I've thought about this stuff for a while, and I like coming up with metaphors and analogies. That's like kind of where I like to, where if anyone's ever seen me on Twitter, like quote tweet, I'm usually trying to draw on some type of an analogy where the person agrees with like the premise of an analogy, and I'm going to try to take them all the way there. So yeah, I've always liked coming up with metaphors and analogies, just because I think that is a good way to show people like how, okay, you accept this premise in one sense. We all agree with this, you know, this premise, but if we took this premise and applied it into a different scenario, why is it different? And that just gets people thinking on their own, you know? So, I guess it's just been something I always like to think. I always like to come up with new analogies, and the shorter the better. Sometimes I like to shock people. Like I'll come up with like a hyperbolic analogy, just that people will say, well, that's just insane, right? But I'm trying to like shock them into like understanding the core point of it. But yeah, I guess it's just been something I've always tried to do.
Yeah, I think that's great, because you know, you can know your Rothbard or your Hayek or Mises or whatever, but things from decades ago aren't always going to resonate with people today,
right?
You know, and coming from a religious background, I was kind of taught that, you know, you could know the Romans Road or whatever, but if you can't evangelize to someone and meet them on their own turf, then it's going to be a dead message. So
right.
Bringing new new metaphors forward and new styles of messaging and new parallels is necessary. It's not just like a good idea. We actually need to do it if we want to stay relevant, I think.
Right. Yeah, 100%. Because like, if you just tell someone, oh, hey, especially if they're not already buying into what you're saying, if you tell someone, hey, go read this long book that you're not interested in and you don't want to learn, you know, it's
right.
Just like most people aren't going to want to even give you the time of day. So you kind of have to hook them. It's like, you know, hooking a fish in when you're fishing. You kind of have to hook them in first before you can pull them out of the water.
Yeah, totally. And I'm kind of lucky because I'm a truck driver, so I can listen to books on tape or podcasts while I'm working. But my last job, you know, I worked pretty much the same hours. I worked like at least 50 hours a week, and I was setting utility poles at a power line company. And you can't, you know, you're digging all day and you're near electricity. You got to be paying attention. Like you can't research anything.
Right.
You don't have time to read a long book, and then you get home and you're tired and you go to bed. And then on the weekend, you don't want to sit down and read Man, Economy, and State. I mean,
right.
You want to go, you know, fool around, because it's your 2 days off you have, and then you have 2 weeks off a year. So a lot of these people, they're not going, even if they want to, they're not going to have time to read all this literature and really internalize it. So if you can package it into something that they understand and that relates to their life, you're
mm-hmm.
really doing them a huge service.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. You always have to find what they're interested in and what they find really valuable in their own lives. And you have to start from there. Right. Like some libertarians will like I like the economics of libertarianism. I'm really into it, but I feel like some libertarians go overboard on it in the sense that they'll try to say, oh, well, look, this is just economically better. It's like, okay, most people are not like the reason that people support like a minimum wage, even though logically and economically it doesn't make much sense. Especially if you assert their desired end is to help people. Most people aren't doing that from a base of economics. They're doing that from a base of that's where their heart feels is right. You know what I mean? So coming at these things from economics, I think libertarians sometimes like miss the point. You always have to come at them from where they are and find ways to address their concerns. Because most of the state is built on fear, right? Fear of what would we do without it? You know, how would we exist without it? How would the thing I love still exist without it? And you kind of have to find out what that thing is for each individual, and you kind of have to start there. So there's no one, you know, there's no one strategy to changing people's minds, because each person's an individual.
Yeah, and then if you are someone who's good at making boring topics interesting, then go for it, because you'll have a monopoly on that. You know, like I was never interested in economics until I started listening to Peter Schiff, and just I mean, he's probably not for everybody, but for some reason, just the way he talked about it just grabbed my attention, and I couldn't stop listening to him. I just listened to hours and hours and hours of him talking.
He has this very like man on the street vibe, you know what I mean? Yeah. So that Peter Schiff, he did those videos, in fact, where he was just on the street talking to people. So he's really good and inroad. He's a really good inroad.
Yeah, I mean, Ryan Dawson was talking about how he never thought anyone would be talking about the Federal Reserve because it's so abstract and dumb. But then Ron Paul somehow made it catch on, you know, to millions of people. So it doesn't mean like I just don't want people to think I'm saying don't talk about the important things if they're boring. You just have to present them in a way that is interesting to people. You can make the most. I mean, Peter Schiff makes interest rates fascinating to listen to him talk about. You know, like, you'd think that would be the most boring thing ever, but when he breaks down how it caused the housing crisis and you know how it it's just like, I mean, you'll want to listen to him. So people just have to realize that like all these things are important, so we need to make them grokkable to your audience.
That's right. And I'm not saying like, you know, that you should not approach any type of economic argument, because there's so much that's based on economics. It's just about taking the economic argument and making it interesting in the sense that you're appealing to something someone already has an intuition about and then latching on from there. Right. You know what I mean? Like if there's a way to describe the Fed in purely economical terms that people will just glaze their eyes over. But what Ron Paul did so well is he showed that, this is why you're being screwed by these people. Right. And that's what you have to do. You have to show them why this entity or why this program or this policy is negatively affecting your life in some way, or it's negatively affecting your neighbor's life in some way or something. Right. So you always have to latch onto that, you know, that pathos that people have, that emotional resonance.
Yeah. I think we're having trouble with the stream. I can't tell, but we'll just keep going. let's see. I don't know. Like I've seen people who wouldn't have been interested in certain topics suddenly become interested in them too. You know, like we were saying, like you can have people who voted for Mitt Romney interested in hearing about anarchy now. But I'm also hearing people interested in hearing about how low interest rates don't help them, or artificially low interest rates don't help them, because they've lived through the housing crash of 2008, and now they're seeing the same thing basically happen right now before their eyes. I mean, with the housing market, everything's inflated beyond belief. Lumber prices are through the roof, and all the interest rates are super artificially low again. So they're actually like, I've seen this before. I know what's coming. And so you can grab their attention on these issues that the times are making available to us that in regular times probably wouldn't.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, also speaking of like, this is how I've actually approached, like, as you're saying, the economic argument. You can make people who are not interested in economics interested if you promote it in the right way. And I think, one of the ways, kind of like sidestepping this for a second or branching off, one of the ways I love having anarchism described to people, right, is Michael Malice has said this, and I kind of borrowed this from him, which is that anarchism is a relationship, right? It's like people think when someone says anarchism, usually they mean an anarchist society. That's kind of their built-in perception. Well, how do we get to an anarchist society? But I think it's a mistake to, you know, point that you can have anarchism without being in an anarchist society. Anytime me and you talking right now, no one is forcing either of us into this interaction right now. You know what I mean? Neither of us are trying to dominate the other's will. So we're, in some sense, we're in an anarchist relationship right now, and people have anarchist relationships all the time. So considering that anarchism exists all around us, the only question then is, okay, well, how do we take the anarchism that exists now and expand that to other social services, right? And then that's when you can get into like the practical discussion. But I just wanted to point that out, because I find that's like a really powerful way to like show people that, hey, this already works and happens already, you know, in the setting that we're in right now. And if you can do that for like more different, even like different topics like economics, like show the actual praxis of economics, you know, where it's not just numbers, where it's like, oh yeah, this is just everyday interaction. I think that's a way people can really get on board with the message.
Yeah. I see you guys in the comments. Some of you can see it, some of you can't. Sorry. I hope that the version that saves to YouTube plays all the way through. So sorry about that, guys. But the show goes on. So Ace, you've unexpectedly come into success just like I have. What do you expect going forward? Do you think this is going to be a long deal, or you think this is going to fizzle up and go away, or you don't really care either way? What do you think? I have no idea for myself. So.
Well, I don't want to say I don't care, because I do care about my followers and I'm appreciative of them, but I'm also not trying to, you know, it's not my goal to get more followers. You know, I'm more of a, if it happens, it happens, as far as like followers go and stuff. But, right. I'm probably just going to keep, you know, doing what I do on Twitter, which is get into arguments no rational person should ever get into, and quote tweet them. Yeah.
Gotcha. That's,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've had the opportunity where I could have really ridden a vein of populism or anger that I just didn't really care about. So I didn't, you know, like a lot of people, you see them trying to grab onto any position of visibility that they can get, you know, like they just want to gain followers and they don't really care about a certain message. I actually lose followers because I'll gain a bunch because I'll say something bad about Biden and they'll think I'm like a America First Republican or something. And then I'll go hard in the paint against Zionism or the cops, you know, and I'll instantly lose 500 people, you know? And
yeah, that's right.
You strike me as very similar. Like you just say what you think. So the following is commensurate with, you know, whoever you happen to get
that's
your message
right.
to. That's like, okay, I want to hear more here.
Yeah. It's about getting the right people, not the most people, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes you can, I mean, I don't want to lose the wrong people. Like if I have the wrong people following me, I hope that they learn something or that they change their minds.
But that's right.
Sometimes it's funny, like people are demanding that I change my position because they like me so much on some issue, like guns, I guess. You know, they love me on guns and they're just like so mad that I could call Israel an apartheid state that we've been funding. You know, they're just, I mean, they lose their minds. They're like, no, you're not fitting into my box that I want you to be. Do you
That's
have
right.
that? Like, are people ever like, come on, Ace, like, how can you say this?
Yeah, I've gotten some followers in a similar way from you, like either criticizing Trump or criticizing Biden in some sense. And then when I say something else, they kind of like, especially with like the cops, some people, like if I get Republican followers, sometimes it's not that I want to drive them away, but sometimes I'll put out if I know I've gotten a lot of Republican followers, I'll put out like a mild anti-cop tweet. I just want to see if I can get any traction on it from them. Because if I can, I want to see the people who will instantly just unfollow me and who are like, you know, the people who you would not be able to get through to and the people who will actually go and interact with me and question, right? Because those are the type of people like, okay, I may be able to get through to this person, at least in some sense, or at least talk to them. So it's always a balancing act.
Yeah, it's not necessarily self-censorship, or I guess it is, but I wouldn't say it's bad if you're thinking like, okay, I can say like my completely unadulterated, uncensored thought here, but I'm gonna just lose half my following.
Yeah.
You know, or I could say something a little more tempered that might make them think and might make them want to hear more, you know?
Right. I mean, I won't self-censor like throughout, like for a long time, but like only if I feel like, okay, I want to see how far I can poke them at my followers, you know, the new followers I picked up before, and to see which ones will actually interact with it in a good way, not in like, you know, a malicious way. But yeah,
I get a lot of people saying like, if you would just not talk about the police, like you don't have to tell us you like them, but just don't talk about them, or just like don't talk about Palestine, just don't talk about it.
If you would just be a Republican.
Yeah, if you would just like talk about your Republican views and just keep the libertarian stuff to yourself, like then we can get along. It's like, well, why would I want that? Like, I mean, I could just do the same thing for the Democrats. I could just talk about legalizing, you know, marijuana and freeing nonviolent drug offenders and abolishing the death penalty, and then just not talk about guns or economics, or, you know, like what am I getting out of that if I just like don't talk about the things that I care about?
Right. And you know, there will never be any progress if people are too scared to, you know, say what they think, right? Even if what they think is wrong, you still want to have like some type of like cultural ethos where people feel comfortable saying these things, because there's a good chance, you know, that the predominant culture, which I believe is correct, is wrong. You know, the dominant culture, the dominant thought process about like social interaction, what people think is justified is wrong, right? We can all think about this like, to be a little hyperbolic, you know, times of slavery, right? Most people back then thought that, well, you know, this is just the way it's always been, right? That's the argument you always hear. That's just how it is, or that's the way it's always been. And if you just accept that, then there will never be any progress ever, right? By definition, you can never have progress if that's your retort to everything. Well, that's just how it is, right? You know, so you always need those people who are willing to push the Overton window. Even if those people pushing it are wrong themselves, you still want those people because they keep you in check in some sense.
Right. So, we're coming up on an hour here almost, but I just want to ask you about like what other platforms you're on. I know you're on the Slurp Gang podcast.
Yes.
I did watch an episode of that, and I don't know how educational it was, but it's certainly entertaining.
Right. Yes. From the episodes we put out, if you come looking for an educational podcast, you might have taken the wrong turn, but you know, who knows in the future, we may have something, I'm mostly on Twitter at @ace_archist on Twitter. And I'm a co-host of the Slurp Gang podcast, which you just mentioned, along with my other co-host, Cotton Archist on Twitter, and Peaceful_Slave, also known as Jay. So you can check us out on that show on all the podcatchers there.
There was some education. I listened to episode 4, and I learned a lot about different ratios that you can calculate.
Yes, you know, that's right.
They might be useful at some point to somebody.
Yeah,
so
it depends on your definition of educational, right? It's all subjective.
Yeah, I mean, you're learning something. I didn't say you're learning anything useful. You know, you're just gonna learn something. So,
right. Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm a big fan, man. I like what you say. We'll definitely get you back on. Maybe as you've noticed, I try to get different minds together on this show. So maybe I'll pair you up with somebody else who's got an intriguing mind.
That'd be great.
And especially, I hope this, I'll watch this through after it saves to YouTube, make sure that people can hear it. If the recording's screwed up too, we'll have to redo it. But I really appreciate you coming on, and I really appreciate your perspective, but I'll just give you the last word if there's any other thoughts or anything else you want to say. And I've got the Slurp Gang podcast and your Twitter page linked in the description. So
awesome. Thank you. Yeah, no, just it was my pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me on. This was great. It's a big honor.
You got it, man. I will be live streaming with Magnus Panvidya and Clint from Liberty Lockdown on Thursday, everybody. I think we're doing it at 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So check in for that. And I'm going to be going on Lions of Liberty next Tuesday, I think. And I'm also going to be going on Magnus's show with Ryan Dawson and Fiorella Isabel and Sarcasm Stardust on Saturday. So keep your eyes out for that. And thanks again, Ace. Like I said, we'll do this again.
Thank you.